Last summer, comedian Hannah Gadsby reached a global audience when her special Nanette premiered on Netflix. Nanette didn't just resonate with viewers because it was funny, although it was very funny. The special was also deeply personal and found Hannah wrestling with trauma, rage, and even the conventions of comedy itself.
I do think I have to quit comedy, though. And seriously, and it's probably not the forum to make such an announcement, is it? in the middle of a comedy show. But I have been questioning, you know, this whole comedy thing. I don't feel very comfortable in it anymore.
1 year later, Hannah is back on stage performing in a new show called Douglas. But she told me that doesn't mean she isn't quitting, in a sense.
In a sense, I have quit what I was doing. My life has changed. But also, it was a theatrical conceit. I understood the criticisms that were going to come and I cut them off at the path. Said, yes, I know you're going to call this not comedy. How about I quit before you call it not comedy?
In many ways, Douglas picks up where Nanette left off, with Hannah going far beyond the normal confines of a comedy show.
Being able to speak in front of a live audience is an incredible opportunity, and I don't think it should be restricted to, you know, either theatre situation or comedy situation. I think there's something to be said about being able to stand up as an individual and talk to a group of people.
One thing Hannah talks to audiences about in her new show is being diagnosed with autism. And she told me that her diagnosis is a part of the show's very DNA.
The central premise behind the show is that, you know, those bits that come later in the show that are divulging the diagnosis and, you know, how the world sees me and how that affects me. But the entire show is about autism, and the framework is an autistic mind. Everything that I do in the show, before I even talk about autism, is autism. It is autistic in tone, and that is incredibly important for me that people not necessarily understand to put words to. I don't know that culturally we are aware enough of how to talk about the autism experience, but I want people to experience it, and I think I'm getting it across.
It's fascinating, because I was going to ask you whether that was part of, at the beginning of the show, you spell out for the audience what's going to happen. And was that part of that experience also wanting people to understand the autistic mind?
To a certain extent, but also the show is for people on the spectrum. So that's for people on the spectrum. People not on the spectrum will enjoy it and go, oh, that's cheeky. But the show is loaded. It is so loaded. It feels like it's just skipping across, but you could watch it 3 or 4 times and still pick stuff up. That's the fun for it. It's a puzzle. I have written it for myself and people on my side of the spectrum in mind to say, oh, there's pieces of puzzles to pick up. I've been listening to the same audiobook for the last 2 years, right? That's, you know, surprises aren't what I'm in. That's not my bag. So this show is sort of like, oh, there are no surprises, but there's a journey. And if you walk the same path every day, you see every day's a new day with an autistic mind. You know, there's that saying, you don't see the forest for the trees, or you don't see the trees for the forest. I think my experience of the spectrum is I see the forest and the trees. So it's a busy mind. It's like, yep, there's a forest. There's also trees. There's lots of trees. Did you see the forest? And that's what I'm trying to do with the show.
And yet people are laughing. You spelled it all out. There were still moments of surprise in the show, even though you laid it out for us. So let's talk a little bit about some of the elements in the show, at least thematically, that were interesting to me. I want to talk about anger, talk about rage, and how it played in Nanette. It was a big part of Nanette. It was something that inspired us here at The Takeaway to examine the role of rage in particular and women. And at some point you said you didn't think anger could be productive. And what I took away in Douglas, and tell me if I'm wrong, is that it feels like you found ways to channel that anger into something that there was a phrase you used called reasonable rage. Tell me about that.
I think reasonable rage is that, you know, is to find a reasonable way to express frustration. And I don't explore that necessarily in Douglas. I'm not exploring the reasonable rage. I feel like Nanette was my reasonable rage. Nanette was as much about autism as Douglas, but I didn't say it expressly. But also Nanette was a lot to do with trauma. And I think we don't allow people who are traumatized the room to be angry. And I think you need to be angry and you need to be heard. And that was the incredible thing about the journey of Nanette, is I didn't expect my anger to be received very well. I fully expected it to be rejected. But I can't claim I authored that experience completely. I put the work out there, but it was also in the zeitgeist, something, 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 something. With Douglas, I'm playing. All my anger in Douglas is mock anger. It is playful, although I have received feedback that people think it's just anger, which makes me laugh so much. I'm dead inside. It's not like the anger in Nanette was real and visceral, and because it was tied up in my own trauma, I wasn't removed from it. Like my performance in Nanette, there was genuine pain every time I performed it, because you don't get to just partition yourself off from your trauma when you face it full on like I did. And also, I couldn't ignore the room. Every time I put that in a room, I felt, you know, there's a misunderstanding about autism that we don't have empathy. I think if there's a lack of empathy, it is because we have to lock ourselves off from it, because we're basically, we don't have skin. My experience of it and a lot of people's experience of it, it is a spectrum. So in a room full of people who I've put in shock, I feel that. That affects me, and that what you can see in my performance of it. And so they're very, very different beasts in that sense, in how I so talk and express anger. So in Douglas, when I say, you know, anger is, I have reasonable anger, that's Nanette. That was all reasonable. I had every right. But with Douglas, it is all just play, and it's fun.
Oh, it's very fun. One of the things that was fun was also how you have a theme throughout which focuses on language. As a journalist, I'm very interested in the language and the words. And you say that men, particularly white men, have named all of the things, right? And when you think about it, it's so true. Why was that something you wanted to talk about now? Why was language and cultural imperialism and male dominance of language something that you thought needed to be a part of this?
Well, I think after Nanette, I wanted to do another piece of work because I knew the world was watching, and I felt to me that I either had to disappear and be good for my word, but I don't know what else to do. And also, I wanted to stick within my skill set. You know, I didn't want to go, oh, I'll make a TV show now because someone said I could. And I'm like, I don't know how to do that. So I thought I would do the next thing with all my tools that I know how to use. So that's the decision behind it. And the name thing is quite, language itself is a distancing tool. You know, in Nanette, I was just there. I was just really ripped myself open. I felt so vulnerable, and I still feel vulnerable. Like the world's carried me away. I'm not in control of my own life.
And that post Nanette.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, like not necessarily in a bad way. I've got lots of opportunities, but change is not a great, easy thing for me to navigate. And my life is moving a lot faster than I really not understand how to navigate. But that is all fine. With it comes a lot of privilege and opportunity. But language for me then is a way of distancing myself and playing with that as a remove. But also language does shape culture. And those who get to choose the language get to choose how to shape culture. We know that. And we can see it in effect. This, you know, social media is, you know, the way we hate speech is a lot freer on social media now. Like that is the way it is. People are feeling more brave about not being more caring. And so that has been a fascinating thing for me. And I did get a lot of hate after Nanette. And a lot of that hate, it was disguised as critical feedback, but the language was hateful. And people who engage with Nanette in a critical way that didn't use hateful language is fine. I'm really fine. I don't think I'm everyone's cup of tea, and nor should I be. Everything's okay. For me, what was interesting is when people were wrapping it up in hate, and my mind then goes, why? Not because I'm a historian, a hindsight specialist, so to speak, you know, I'm going, well, what are the roots of these things? And that took me on the path of language. And that's wrapped up also in the way that people frame autism. A lot of our, you know, sometimes we can be really blunt because we don't use metaphor. You know, we're just like, this is this is a thing I think. And I like it. I enjoy when other people, you know, dance around what they want to say. That's rich. But that's not how I communicate. And so words, every word is weighted for me because I don't waste time.
Are we in a moment now where talking about autism and being open about that is more acceptable, or do you think it's just necessary? I mean, how did you make the decision to say, I'm ready to talk about this now?
I made that decision knowing that it was a huge risk. People don't get to talk about autism and create work that is autistic. That's important. Like, I'm not just going, hey, I'm autistic. Here's me talking about autism in a way that is, the whole tone of what I do is autistic. We don't get to speak for ourselves that much. It's often, oh, here's what it looks like from the outside in. I'm trying to do it the other way around. That comes with a huge amount of pressure. A, I can't speak for everyone on the spectrum because it's a spectrum. But also, personally, I come up more and more scrutiny. Does she even have it? Does it mean anything? Is that important? Can women even have autism? You know, because it is so entirely gendered, and that's why I talk a little bit about biology in the show, you know, because it's like it's wrapped up in that. It's wrapped up in the misogyny of medicine, you know. So there's a lot, you know, that I don't sort of necessarily have time or the scope to attack deeply in this show, but it is a risk.
In your work, you also, in this show in particular, in Douglas, you talk a lot about not just the male dominance of language, but the male dominance of comedy and the rules of comedy and how they've been shaped by men. And I think even today, when I scroll through, you know, looking for stand-up comedy, I love it. The majority of the options that I see are men, and it's usually a very similar type of comedy. You, on the other hand, are creating almost a new genre that combines all of these things. And in this latest performance with Douglas, it was even visual. As we move forward with this craft, the work that you're doing, are you expectant that there will be more people breaking the traditional male comedy rules?
I hope. That's what I want. The rule, like, I love rules. That's the irony of it. I love rules. And I make up my own rules for comedy. You know, when I set out to write Douglas, I set my own rules. They were arbitrary and sometimes I had to shift them. But I really like rules. But I think with something, especially with expression, you have to work out what rules work for you and your story. My story doesn't fit into set up punchline. And also, being autistic, I do not do well in competitive arenas. So doing stand-up in clubs was really painful for me in my early days. Like, it was really traumatic, not in that, like, oh, I'm a snowflake, because actually, yes, I am a snowflake. I don't like the competitive, combative, you know, gladiatorial culture that surrounds it. I'm saying that's wrong. But for someone on the spectrum, that is incredibly distressing. So what I'm hoping is I'm like going, oh, we can give it a nudge out into this other place where other people can play with their own forms of expression. I think it is actually a very patriarchal idea. And you see it a lot in the history of modern art. It's like, oh, one voice cancels out the other. And it's like, oh, come on, guys. Come on, let's not play Jenga.
Historical cultural Jenga.
Yeah, right. Like, my voice is not canceling out anybody else's. That is, I can't express that enough. I hope that it's poking a hole in people's expectations. I don't want other people to do shows like mine. As someone on the spectrum, I don't understand other people. I rely on other people to tell me what their life is like. And so that is why I'm so angry at history, because all I've got is Eurocentric white male. So that's all I've got to go on. And I'm like, no, I'm poorer for it. Ironically, I think a lot like a straight white man. But that's not enough. Like, we're poor for this dearth of voices. And so I hope that this means that people can play a lot more.
Do you think it'll resonate, or has it been resonating outside of the U.S. and Australia? Because I know the U.S. was a surprise for you, but going beyond this sort of Eurocentric, you know, white-dominated society.
I'm delighted to say that I have a lovely, huge audience in India and in South America. This pleases me greatly. I don't know what it's like to be from those places, so I'm delighted that there's something about my experience that speaks to people from there. I'd be just delighted to see that perhaps I light a fire under some voices that get to spread in places like that. So I think that's something to say about, you know, I love live performance, but Netflix opened my work up to places that I would not have been able to do on my own steam.
Hannah Gadsby is performing her new show, Douglas, at the Darryl Roth Theater in New York through September 7th. Hannah, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.